You might. You remember Jed from Beverly Hillbillies?
The patriarch of an Arkansas family moving to Beverly Hills because they struck gold, black gold, Texas tea. Why are we going to be talking Beverly Hillbillies?
I'm glad you asked. Texas tea, black gold. Let's get into it.
Why are we talking about this Jed Clampett routine, Black Gold Texas Tea? We're in the Midwest here.
That's right. Black Gold Texas Tea. We're going to be talking about composting
and with worms. Oil?
With worms.
Oh, with worms.
The tea.
Okay.
The black gold of what they leave us to put on our plants. It's going to help your garden. Castings, worm castings. We're digging deep tonight.
That's a pun. That's a play on words, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
All right. What kind of do you know your worms?
I know a lot more about worms now after doing all my studying.
Okay.
Unlike Jed Clampett.
Well, Jed,
he got lucky with the crude.
He's illiterate.
Let's hope all of our listeners get lucky with castings.
Well, Jed said, "Let's get away from here." Goodness gracious, if you could. All right. Now, what do you want to know? I mean, how do you want to start this with the earthworm castings or earthworm composting? By the way, speaking of, do you know what the real technical name of the composting thing is, what it's called? I know my earthworms, and I know they're hermaphroditic, and I know it's called vermicomposting.
Vermicomposting.
Verma. V-E-R-M-I-C-O-M-P-O-S-T-I-N-G. One word. And you know how I know about this? I'm going to give you a quick little synopsis. Eons ago, back in the late 70s, the United States was bringing a lot of South Vietnamese people over to the United States, and they needed sponsors. The churches would sponsor them, entire families. Well, Black Diamond, the company that is sponsoring us and the place that your wife owns, is a long time ago, would provide one of the main ingredients for these Vietnamese people to come in. They're very resourceful. They would buy a product that we would sell called Michigan Peat. It's a combination of peat moss and topsoil. And Jerry, one of the owners, the old owners of the company, wanted to know, he finally asked him, what are you using them for? Using all this, because he would buy 10 extra pallets for them. And they said, for the earthworms.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it is. It for earthworms, and it was perfect environment for them, but he asked them what they would do with the earthworms. The one thing that they did, it is a food supplement. Did you know that?
No.
An earthworm that they use, the meat of an earthworm, and this is going to sound disgusting, but it's in, well, hot dogs. They grind them up and they put it in there. It's a filler for the hot dog as well. But that wasn't just it. They were providing the nutrients that the earthworms were creating out of that composting that they do, the vermicomposting. It's called earthworm castings, and they use that fertilizer to provide, well, they used it as a fertilizer to provide nutrients for food, and it's a natural resource for most of the, let's say, the restaurants around town, the Chinese, the Cantonese, the Vietnamese restaurants, and they used it, and it was fantastic for them. And these people really, really made a quick buck on it. They're very resourceful. But why are we talking about this?
I really wish you wouldn't have told me what's in hot dogs right before summer begins.
Well, that's not all of them.
I don't want to know anything. No. I want to know less and less.
That's why I eat hamburger.
You know, it's this time of year when things need to get started. You know, we talked about prepping for spring. We talked about getting your rain barrels all going. And we're going to be planting stuff outside and filling all those gardening bins. We need to give a little extra love.
Well, it's quicker than regular composting. It takes about 6 to 8 weeks for a worm compost to totally break down. Now,
so can we give our listeners a scope of this? This is a system that you put together. You can buy the stuff online. You can build your own. It's all over YouTube. It's all over the internet of finding all this material. But basically, you're going to be raising 500 to 1,000 worms, and you're going to be taking care of them, and you're going to be feeding them your scraps. So it's a...
Well, what kind of scraps are you going to give them?
Well, we'll get into all the food scraps, but it's food scraps. it's all that type of stuff. And then you're going to be taking their castings after they're done and they move up a level in these little houses, these chambers that they live in. And you clean that up and disperse it in your garden and voila. What do you get, Mike?
You get, well,
what do you get from doing all this work?
Natural ingredients that can be reincorporated and reinstituted into the food supply system that you're creating for your family itself. Now, mind you, you don't necessarily have to use it just for your own stuff that you're going to be eating, like your cabbage, your lettuce, tomatoes, etc. You could use it on ornamentals too, but I consider that kind of a waste. Do you know that the compost itself, once the worms are, that area is totally composted and done, that the worms generally want to leave that? Do you know why?
Probably because, like, they don't like living in their own...
Schmutz! That's right!
Nice cover.
Wallowing in their own schmutz. They basically leave it. I mean, that's their castings. It's what they cast away from what they eat. But it's the most rich, nutrient-based, organic-based, fertilizer that you could probably use. There's one thing I don't recommend you use for any of your worm composting.
I was just going to ask, what is the best
use? Do you treat your lawn? If you do, I'm going to recommend you don't put your lawn clippings in there for the earthworms. Because pesticides, there's nutrients in there, and you're eliminating that organic compound that we're talking about, you know, feeding your family.
If you're going to put grass clippings in your worm compost bin, it needs to be clean grass.
Clean grass,
clean.
And grass gets a little hot too. So, but primarily, you stay away. Food scraps are cool, and it's like the regular composting. You do not use any animal byproducts. For instance, you don't use buttery products or anything that's oil or greasy. It's going to affect both the compost and the worm. I will recommend that you stay away from peels, like orange peels. Banana peels are okay, but stay away from things that are like citrus, like limes and lemons, anything that's got acid in it.
Non-acidic.
Fruit and vegetables. And again, do not use the coffee grounds in this. Use that on your regular compost bin.
Really?
Yeah, because...
No, I heard that coffee grounds were okay. Not like an appetizer size.
That would be... Well, yeah, but if you want it, you can, but it's got to be used, first of all. And then secondly, you don't just continuously go ahead because... Coffee grounds are acidic, and the worms do not like to be an acidic base. It's got to maintain a little bit more of a neutral base. This isn't something that you're going to have to be a scientist and measure. Just if you're going to use coffee grounds, don't use a boatload of them. Just go ahead, and that's why I'm saying, you know, it's kind of iffy on that. If you're going to use coffee grounds, I'd rather you use them in your regular compost bins. But did you know that there are selective worms that do best in composting and those that didn't?
Yeah, but before we get to that, we're getting into some of the details, and we haven't talked about...
Oh, yeah, I forgot. You're a five-year rookie. Okay.
The making of this thing. Like, some people use plastic tubs, maybe, that are 4 inches tall. You know, stuff you find at Target or, you know, Walmart or, you know, and they put holes in the bottom, for all the extra moisture to leak through to get that Texas tea.
Okay.
And then for the worms, they will find those holes and climb up you if you build several layers. Some people have 3 or 4 story tall complexes, I'm going to call them.
Condominiums?
Yeah. You know, and then, but basically what you're talking about is soaked cocoa fiber is your medium that you're putting these worms in.
Do you have to use it?
Well, it's one of the suggested...
Oh, okay.
Materials.
All right.
And you're going to throw in about 500 to 1,000 worms.
Now, well, how are you going to count them?
You're not. You're just going to buy them online and
trust
that they counted them for you.
Okay. Buy them in quantity. I mean, that's the way. Okay. Like at Amazon, does Amazon sell them?
There's a number of worm farms.
All you got to do is Google it.
You can probably find them on Amazon too, but there's many worm farm websites out there. I'm looking at one now and, you know, geez.
Well, what kind of worm?
2,200 red, 500 red.
How many do you use for square footage, Mr. Research?
Well, typical a rectangular condominium, I'm going to call it, composting bin, worm composting bin, is 20 inches by 16 by 8 high And then they had several layers. These people also sell these things. And they have indoor and outdoor bins for composting worms.
Really?
Yeah. And then they have a lot of them around.
And they come with pull the holes like already? Trays.
Yeah. Everything's ready to go. I mean, they'll sell you the whole kit to get started. So if you want to get started and get to know what you're doing, you know, buy one of the smaller kits, see what they send you. And then when you want to go larger, do it yourself.
Well, I was noticing, too, that the schools are starting to play with this from their science lessons. For instance, they're teaching children how to make compost hermaphrodites as far as the worms having both sexes. What kind of worms work best for actually doing the compost? There's a number of things, and it's really fascinating. You know how, like I said, we got involved with it with the Vietnamese that came over. But then the industry started really kicking in, when a certain vegetation product started to become legalized. People were using the castings for natural fertilizers for their plants. They're growing exceptionally organic on that. You can't get more organic than, let's say, an earthworm, nor the castings. But it does depend on what you're giving them to eat. And they're even broccoli. I mean, I know people that can't stand broccoli. President Bush couldn't stand broccoli. Or was that Brussels sprouts? I know he passed out in Japan because of it. He just, but it was one of those. But yeah, no, you stay away from like the hot stuff, the citric acid stuff, the grapefruit, the lemon peels, the lime peels. You stay away from the things like onions, garlic, broccoli, that sort of thing, because the earthworms generally aren't going to go anywhere near it to eat it or to help it break down. The things that you can incorporate are like your scraps from lettuce, from, let's say you have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich left over and somebody cut your crust. Do they still cut your crust, Scott? But anyway.
I get crustables.
Well, crustables? I got to talk to you later. Anyhow, you can use basically any table scraps with the exception of meat, too. And that'll draw vermin in. It'll basically ruin your whole composting routine because you're not going. I mean, who knows what kind of hormones they've been using in the meats and all this other stuff. It happens to be something that you've got to be a little bit selective. Are you going to help somebody with the type of worms that work best? I mean, you know, they go by location, geographic locale.
Yeah, I know you did some homework on the best ones.
Yeah, I did.
So I will let you discuss that. But what I found kind of interesting, here's a little note for everybody, that these worms can live 1 to 2 years in this type of environment. So if you're in the Midwest, I'm guessing that if you do a year's worth of composting, maybe you let them go at the end. What do you do with them in the winter? They slow down and kind of hibernate.
They will.
From what I understand, I think you have to bring them into at least the garage in order. Now, 32 degrees will kill them. 84 degrees will cook them. And the best temperature is 74. Now, at 54 degrees, they tend to slow down. You know, in the winter, at least in the Midwest, you know, is it worth keeping them over winter? I don't know. But the other thing that was kind of interesting to me was these worms can reach maturity and start breeding 60 to 90 days after hatching. Did you know that one?
I didn't know that one, but I did know that. Did you know the size and length of and the diameter of these critters when they come out of their little egg? They're thinner than a piece of thread, and they're only about an eighth of an inch to a quarter of an inch in length. And then they exponentially grow once they start to feed.
I read that they produced 1 to 2 cocoons a week. Each cocoon contains 2 to 20 eggs.
I didn't know that.
I don't know if I would start off with 1,000.
Well, in those small
worms,
areas.
Maybe I'd start off with the 500, knowing by end of summer I could have 1,000 at this rate.
Well, not only that, but if you've seen some of the bins that they have online, you just named one. What was it about? How many inches by inches? I mean, when you got thousands.
20, 16 by 8.
Yeah, when you got hundreds of them, and they multiply faster, you're going to have more worm than you will compost.
Well, and that's just one layer at that dimensions. I mean, most of these kits that they sell are multiple layers.
Multiple layers, okay.
At least 3 stories tall, I'll call them.
Condominium. They, huh?
Some of them look like just circle discs, you know, on top of each other, and you just rotate and move it around. There's,
well, since the worms don't like to wallow in their own schmutz, and if you do, if you don't check it, and it's nothing but schmutz, meaning that it's, you know, composted worm schmutz, they leave, and you're out of, you know, your investment, unless you basically harvest them, like you said, at the end of the season and keep them in a garage in a nice, well, I would say not composted, but a soil environment that doesn't freeze. It wouldn't go below 54 degrees. What's the temperature below the frost line? Did you know our frost lines here in the Midwest are usually when the ground freezes about 2, 2.5 feet deep?
Yeah.
What's the temperature below that? Because I know that it's constant.
I don't know.
I got to look that up. We'll have it for the next one.
So buy a new set of worms next season. Prices are ranging from, like, let's say $25 to $50, depending on how many you get and which type of worm they are.
Are you going to get the nice return out of it for your $50 investment?
Well, I mean, if I do, yeah, when you if I do the $35 one.
Well, not only that, but I'm saying.
But I'm saying as far as just, you know, 1 year and done.
Yeah.
And not having to work on this. But then again, in the winter, you got a lot of table scraps you can feed these guys, but you got to be careful about overfeeding.
And I wouldn't want to do it indoors anyways. I would just basically do the regular composting outside at that time. And when things start to cook, it gets hot. It gets about 150 degrees on regular compost in the middle of the wintertime. You're set for that. But as far as, let's say, giving the nutrients that you need naturally to each one of your plants, you plant your plants in your compost, but you can make a tea out of it. Now, I'm hoping that these kits have drainage holes in there so you can collect the tea or the juice that's coming out from that. Because if you don't drain that, those worms are going to rot.
They're going to drown.
Yeah. Okay.
One of the suggestions with the tap at the bottom was not to install it. To put another bucket under there and let that naturally drain so that you don't forget, you know, you're on vacation and you forget to drain your worm liquid casting.
Your worm?
Sorry.
And, it won.
And then, you know, and then you basically drown your farm. So okay. They were like, leave that off, let it drain into a bucket and just leave that open.
All right. Now, what they call that tea, right?
Yes. Yeah,
okay. So it's compost tea. Can you utilize both the drainage area itself, the remnants of the drainage that you can make your tea out of, and or can you take the compost and let it steep inside of like a sun tea jar that mom used to use to make iced tea outside, put it on the back patio, let the sun hit and beat on it, and it would create a tea? Because where I'm going with this, I'm going to tell you how to utilize it.
So apparently you can.
Well, yes, you can.
If it depends on how hard you want to make this project. If you want the easy way of doing this, because it's a responsibility of, you know, on top of your garden, you've got this other thing that you're maintaining as well as any other compost pile. So if you have the tea coming out and you mix that with what? How many ounces to a gallon?
On an average, a cup per gallon of water. Now, it's going to be diluted, but you use that directly around the plants. And I would only use it on your vegetable plants. I wouldn't necessarily, you can use it on your, you know, your impatiens, your potted plants, all the other plants. They're going to reap the same benefit. It's just that whatever you put into these things, you're going to want to eat and get out of it too.
Yeah, you want the benefit for your...
For yourself. Now, when you said it was going to be, it's almost like a child taking care of a puppy dog. It's a responsibility, but I think that it's becoming more and more of something that people basically find necessary and second nature. I mean, I'm going to give my plants compost tea if I can over, let's just say, some type of a synthetic oil derivative that you can put into the ground and you're going to be consuming afterwards. So I think in this case, it's more than a responsibility. It's a commitment. And it's
a commitment.
So, I mean, you're not going to name all the worms. You're not going to take them to a worm vet to make sure that the sick worm gets better. No, you're just, I mean, when they die, they're going to decompose and it's going to become part of the composting as well. But again, on an average from the drainage that you're going to get, it's going to be approximately 1 cup of the drainage to 1 gallon of clear water. Yeah. And then use it to stir it, mix it up, and then pour it directly at the base of your whatever you're going to be, you know, growing vegetable-wise.
And if you're a really good gardener and you've been listening to the show long enough,
religiously,
you would know that that water should have come from a rain barrel and not tap water.
It's a 1,000-square-foot roof will give you, what, 600 gallons of rainwater?
Yeah, with a
1-inch rain.
Or
was the other way around?
1-inch rain, 1,000 square feet, 600 gallons of water.
Yeah, I hated math. You've got yourself an ecosystem that you could capitalize on right there, and it's self-sustaining. Now, in case the world collapses, like everybody's saying, you know, it's going to, you can sustain yourself by doing this with no problem at all. But they're going to tell you to stay away from certain types of worms or to use only these kind of worms.
Well, what kind of worms are you suggesting?
Well, I'm not suggesting it's these websites. These people, remember what I told you about the Vietnamese? They didn't go out. They went to the bait shops and they got themselves. I mean, sure, they called them night crawlers, but they used the night crawlers. From what I understand, some sites are saying do not use night crawlers because they're too slow.
It's not that you can't use them. It's an efficiency thing. You want a worm that's going to throw out a lot of castings, maybe have a good...
Let's count the castings and see. I can't believe this. I mean, you know...
Metabolism is good and fast and pushing everything out quickly.
But that's not the night crawler. The night crawler is slow.
Okay.
There's certain worms that you can order online. One of them is, for instance, the Canadian nightcrawler they're telling you to stay away from because they go too deep. They reproduce too fast. You're going to have more worm than you will composting. So stay away from the Canadians. Now, there's an African nightcrawler, but that's expensive as hell. And there's 42 syllables for each word or name that they have for it. You can get those online. Those are very, very, very fast eaters. And they basically will emit the composting almost 2 to 3 times faster than the standard red wiggler.
What's the name again? I missed it.
That's the African nightcrawler.
Oh, because I've seen a lot of super red European nightcrawlers advertised.
That is the fast one, too. And that's the one that they like you to use. But that, like you said, it's the European. And those, you know, if you're going to be cost efficient, I mean, well, okay. I mean, you're going to get what you pay for, hopefully. But then the other one is the red wiggler. Now, that's the one that we see, you know, normally it's a reddish color. But it's related to all of these worms with the exception that the Canadian and the African are a little bit more unique. The nightcrawler, basically, the red wiggler is related to the nightcrawler. They will cohabitate, but you did state, I mean, they're not going to be cannibalistic and attack each other. But they're going, one is slower than the other one. So how are you going to be able to, I would stick with just one when you have the compost. Yeah, separate the compost in one area, collect it, use it when you plant your vegetables, or let's say your starts, then use the tea as a regular fertilization for it. You won't believe how well your plants are going to kick in. But there's a number of different worms. I mean, if you really get into this, then you could go out there and start, you know, manipulating and playing with the castings. There's people.
Or have several farms with different worms.
Yes. Since the beginning, let's say the turn of this century, 2000, when states in the United States were legalizing a certain vegetation, people started to become more and more obsessed with making sure that they were going natural. And these are the people that reinstituted incorporated castings into the growing of their product. And why? Because it's the safest, the most efficient and the best nutrient that you can give these plants, any kind of a plant, to adjust and acclimate into what they need for their growing session.
What I understand about the red wiggler, or just red worm, it's a very common composting worm, is that they can consume a large amount of organic matter. But the biggest thing is they tolerate a wide range of temperatures and moisture levels. And moisture and the temperature level are very important when maintaining these farms.
Now, you're talking, okay, it's an earthworm farm that you're calling it now, and it's vermiculturing or vermicomposting.
Yeah.
And, okay, and you're calling it, is it an earthworm farm or a compost farm?
Well, it's a compost farm.
Okay.
Not earthworms. Earthworms are too slow.
Okay.
Those are your standard earthworms you find out in your front yard or in your garden are not the fast ones to give you a lot of compost in the same amount of time.
How did you find most of your information out, Five-Year Wonder?
Various websites and some YouTube channels of people that were actually building their own compost.
Now, what products then, if you witness, what kind of products do they use to, or material do you use to build your own? If you're not going to buy an already prefab.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying. They were using the cocoa fiber. They were using, you know, like 500 worms. They were doing that 18 or 20 by 16 by 8 plastic bin from your local Target, Walmart, whatever, just a clear rectangle that they were doing, but they were buying like three or four of them, drilling holes in the bottom of them and stacking them on top of each other.
You know what the Vietnamese started out using first?
What?
You know, those little plastic pools that you buy?
Oh, yeah.
They poked the holes in the bottom of it. They put them on top of a pallet where it would drain, and then they had a trough down below to catch the drippings. But again, when the worms would leave on their own. But they used those waiting little pools. They were cheap at first, but then they started using stone. Do not use treated wood. Do not.
Yeah, like anything.
Well,
treated wood, you can't burn. You can't. It'll
kill the worms, and you're going to be ingesting.
It's a construction product only.
Yes.
But yeah, I was interesting that they were talking about you could put the food on the next level. The worms will find the holes, they'll sniff it out, go up the holes, go into that next or down the holes and go into that next section. And then you've got that first layer available to harvest your black,
that's
black
genius.
Gold.
I mean, that's, yeah. And how many inches is that about?
This lady had 8-inch deep.
8-inch deep, each one of the layers.
But it was like, you know what, 3 or 4 inches of the cocoa. And then you had your compost material was 1 inch or 2. And then they had these, they're called blankets.
They're cocoa blankets.
Yeah. Yes. And then you keep those moist and you put those on top of the food and the worm cocoa base. And basically that's to keep it dark because they like it dark, mm-hmm. and the moisture.
There's also something else that, we're going back and forth as far as what an economic way of doing it, or if there's a way that you can already have it pre-constructed that you can use. I don't want to make this as difficult as it sounds because it's really super easy. If by any chance you want to go into this and you have little people, the little people are going to, you can set them out. You got the worms, especially the younger the kid, the better. Ooh, cool. We got 1,000 earthworms or we got 1,000 worms we're going to drop into here. How do we feed them? Well, we're going to feed them table scraps. Do not tell your children that you're going to feed table scraps because the table scraps, whatever they don't eat, they're going to throw in there. And it could be peas and beans and everything else like that is cool. But when it comes right down, they don't like their lamb chop or their pork chops or their hamburger or the liver, fried liver. They're going to put all that stuff in there. So try to regulate and watch them doing this. Scott's, on the other hand, one of these is, I think he's going to be doing this on a religious basis. Aren't you, Scott? Are you going to give it to your banana trees?
I'm not doing this.
You're not going to do it?
No.
Okay. I guess not.
I read about mistakes to avoid, and this may be the most interesting part for our listeners. The first one is that you can really overfeed, and you got to be careful about that. The worms technically can eat their weight in a day. So when people were building these condominium units, they basically, when they put the worms in, they waited like 2 or 3 days to let them acclimate themselves to their new surroundings.
The environment, right.
Before they fed them. So they were, you know, getting them hungry and ready to go. And then they came out and put their scraps. And
Do you bury the scraps?
Or no, you just lay it on top.
Okay.
Lay it on top, and then you put that blanket on.
Yeah.
I guess if you don't have the blanket, then
you could use
you
newspapers.
Yeah. So they were suggesting a good ratio is 1/2 pound of organic scraps per 1 pound of worms.
Okay.
Okay. And then so it's like every two or three days you're feeding these. Not every day. It's not like a dog.
But I think this is going to get just, I mean, remember how, I'm going to sound sexist here, but my mother used to read the cookbooks and the baking books and all this procedure. Quarter of a teaspoon of this, a half a teaspoon of that, a tablespoon of this. She got to the point where she did a dash, a pinch, and a glurp. Yeah. And that worked the same way. So when you get good enough at this, you're going to know exactly what the compost and the worms are going to be needing.
Mike talked about the right and wrong foods. Wrong foods is another high-end mistake that people make. And what Mike didn't suggest.
Oh, sure.
You probably should cut these pieces, if you can, small, you know, or process them in a processor or whatever. That cuts down on the odor, which thus pests won't be trying to get into your worm condominium.
From what I heard, yeah, because the organic matter that you're putting in, like let's call it a lettuce leaf, the whole thing's not going to break down at the same pace, so it's going to decompose on its own, thus the smell. So if you shred it or if you rip it apart into small pieces or you cut it up and then lay it up out on top, it'll be a lot easier for the worm to consume. As well, it would be less of an aromatic failure.
I also was watching the one guy. He put a whole half avocado shell in it and didn't process it, didn't break it down, just left it the whole thing. But he said if he has that blanket on top of it, that helps keep the smell down too, that cocoa blend.
Well, what I read too was that a regular composting bin, you have to put lime on it to help to eliminate the smell or the fragrance, the ambiance. Worm composting is far less annoying as far as
odor
goes.
Yeah.
I mean, if you wanted to even bring it down to absolutely nothing, you can do exactly what you're talking about here. But I guess each one has its own unique system.
Now, here's another interesting tidbit that you can do. They say this is the perfect food or the perfect way to present some of the foods. If you have the time, Jesus, this is getting really intense here.
You freeze
your table scraps for 48 hours, and that helps dehydrate them.
Freeze drying.
Yeah. Well, you don't even have to. It's not like really freeze drying. You're not like going crazy, but.
What is dehydration, Scott? Lack of moisture, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
So that stands for the dry, doesn't it?
Yes, sir.
And if you put it in the freezer, what do? So you freeze and dry it.
That's what, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Okay, so we.
That's like having lobster or steak at a 5-star restaurants to worms when you give them the dehydrated stuff, but that's a lot of extra work.
That was a disgusting analogy. All right. If you're not going to do any composting or vermicomposting, is this accessible to people anywhere that they can get their own?
Well, yeah, you can get worm castings at a garden center.
Not all of them. Reputable garden centers. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And I mean,
this is just another way, but I thought about that and I was just like, why am I telling people not to come to my store and buy worm castings, but to make your own? But this brings them in. Circle of life with your food, your less landfill filling, you know, you're taking it and giving it back to Mother Nature.
I mean, we're basically, your Midwest Garden podcast, the reason you and I started this was to help people bring to their own attentions that they can basically do this. They don't have to rely on the grocery stores. And besides, the food at the grocery store, sure, it is nutritious, but it's not as nutritious as what you can do when you incorporate worm castings, all of your organic matter that you're going to be utilizing, the natural nutrients that you're going to be putting in. It's like a computer, junk in, junk out. Good stuff in, good stuff out. You're going to reap the benefit from this. The only thing that we're recommending that you do, though, is try not to be afraid to try. I mean, this is something where, especially if you've got little people, well, I'm not talking little people as far as children alone, but people in general. I know a number of people that are just so addicted to using the composting, using the worm castings, using everything that's natural. They don't even want to use these high-end oil derivative products anymore. So, I mean, it's self-sustaining.
Another mistake to avoid is the bedding that these worms are living in while doing the work for you. You don't want it too wet or too dry. The cocoa fiber. You can also use shredded newspaper, sawdust, peat moss, and the cocoa core. But first, do not use pine or cedar.
Why is that?
It's too acidic.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Did you really know that, or are you just... Yeah, I know. I'm just throwing it right back
at you. He wants me to openly and publicly humiliate myself here.
I'm going for any mistake Mike can make. And no dyed materials.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, when you're talking dyed materials, what are you talking?
I don't know.
And see, that reminds me of clothing. They're not going to eat your clothing.
So maybe...
Newspaper, colored paper.
Yes, color paper. They did say black and white newspaper.
Right.
You can put not only as a bedding, but also as a little bit of a food.
None of your gift wrapping that you put down for Christmas or birthdays or anything like
don't
that.
Don't put any dyed mulch or pieces in there.
Oh, heavens, no.
You know, we had a gentleman come to the garden center today looking for children's playground mulch. And it has to meet certain codes and stuff. And so I had one kind that meets all these codes. And I said, that's it. And it's, you know, it's an organic looking wood color, you know.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, but do you have it in black? And I said, would be dyed. And dyed material is not going to pass the ratings for children to be
first
playing.
First time they use it, the kids are in there. The moms and dads are going to be angrier than sick because they're not going to get that black or red tint out of their fingernails or out of the clothing that they send them to school in.
The other thing to keep in mind is where you locate your bin. You know, we talked about 74 degrees being the optimal temperature for the worms to do their best
expulsion work.
You
don't want it on the heat of the day sunlight, so yes. Not south or west or southwest.
So I would say at the hottest point of the day, find out where it's
shady.
76, you know, not 74, maybe just a little warmer. So during the rest of the day, it's a nice
fluctuate
74.
Too.
So yeah, remember 84 degrees will cook your worms. 32 will freeze them. 74 is the best.
54, they become lethargic. 48, they complain about their arthritis. It gets terrible. I hate to hear worms complain. It's just, you know. Do they have worm doctors? Only I could come up with that question.
I am not even going to try to answer that one.
Okay.
But for you, Mike, yes, there are worm doctors. Why don't you call one?
Well, turn his head and cough.
I've got doing this backwards today. I've got a little bit of a product review to let people know.
Are we done with the worm composting?
That's what I was just going
to
ask
you. All right,
you.
If
Are
there's any questions, I mean, you know, I would like to have them look it up on Google on any of these things. And if you've got any websites that you'd like to share on that, for instance, I've got, you know, a couple of them. One was Cornell University's website, and they were talking about the whole thing and how they're now, you know, getting very, very, very interested in it. Then there's one called eartheasy.com. They go from worm composting basics for beginners. And then again, the YouTube has a number of them. Yeah. I mean, how to make a wormery. Wormery is one of them that was just fascinating.
I found a lot of good stuff on Uncle Jim's Worm Farm.
That's .com. Uncle Jim's wormfarm.com?
Yeah, maybe I'll include that in the show notes.
Sure. Okay. Now, to segue into...
Yeah, so we had a salesman come in, and we buy these sprayers from a company called Harris.
Yeah.
And, you know, they...
Atomizers. I corrected you. But, he's pissed. Oh, boy.
No, you can change the stream to go shoot long and or it's mist.
They make great squirt guns.
They came out with a new one, and every gardener is using hand sprayers for multitudes of things. But these are just really cool. They're latest and greatest. And if anybody's out there looking for sprayers, the Harris 360 Power Sprayer.
Battery operated?
No, it's a hand squeeze trigger. But the nice thing is it sprays in all directions. Left, right, up and down, angled, upside down.
Wait a minute. All you got to do is turn your arm and you can go in any of those directions.
But this will keep the liquid flowing. It's a pressurized sprayer. It automatically reloads, so you don't have to squeeze multiple times to prime in the beginning.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That nozzle is the magic of it all, I assume.
Well, we who get older and have a little arthritic problem, I mean, it would be nice to just pump a couple of times and then have the ample spray come through. So this is what, Harris?
Harris. It's the Harris 360 Power Sprayer. It's
can you put an echo on that? Power Sprayer. It's Sunday.
So it's nice. It's a clear plastic bottle. Holds 32 ounces of liquid. The stuff it's made out of is even recyclable, but yet it will handle chemicals if you need to throw a chemical in there. They have 2-ounce increments measuring scale on the outside of the bottle. So 2 ounces is nice. It's a nice number. But and one of the best things is you can use it with vinegar. It will handle vinegar and it won't get all clogged up.
It doesn't do any damage of oxidizing the insides of the pump.
Yes.
That's cool.
The sprayer can do a wide variety of things. So it is suggested that if you fill it up with water and play with it first, get used to
the mechanics of it,
the mechanics, the spraying angles, and the stream before you, touch your plants with it. Cool thing about this sprayer, too, it's only about $8. A lot of the Harris sprayers.
How much does it hold?
32 ounces.
A quart?
Yeah.
I'd be damned. Okay. And it's only $8?
Yeah, around $8. A lot of their other sprayers are only like $4, and they're really nice ones, and they've got a variety of ones that, you know, handle certain chemicals and, you know, won't get eaten up inside. Sure. But, I mean, this will last you a long time anyway. So we just came upon this. It looks pretty cool. It's been written up through several master gardeners that are writing and just saying, hey, this thing's awesome. So, again, if you're looking for a sprayer, consider the Harris 360 Power Sprayer. So, Mike, that wraps up a little bit of housekeeping, that nice little product, and wraps up.
At your local garden centers. That's kind of cool. If we could do that at every one of our podcasts, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah, nice little new feature. Maybe we'll continue with that. We did the black gold, the worms. You're talking about worm
casting.
Do
you have the theme song so we could close with, you know?
Yeah, we'll probably have a copyright.
All right, so what? Yes, sue us. All right.
What are you going to get? Some worm?
Texas tea.
Schmutz.
S-C-H-M-U-T-Z. And in case anybody wants to know, I think it's a German something, but it doesn't reflect anything what I've been using it as. Anyhow.
Real quickly, before we say goodbye, the shows that we have tentatively scheduled in our spreadsheet, Hellebores. Which is Lenten Rose, so that's a perfect time of year to be talking about that.
Darn tootin'.
And a clematis.
Oh, now people don't know how to take care of them. They're scared crazy because they look so petite and fragile, but they're not.
We had some lady call in today asking if they were in already, and we're like, no, they're a little fragile for this early in the season.
Well, as far as the cold, they'll acclimate.
But and then how many varieties? Like, and it's like, I think we carry like 32 or 36
different varieties
of them. And then we're going to end up talking about zonal geraniums because I found some cool things out about zonal geraniums.
Did you know?
I did.
Oh, boy, Scott's becoming dangerous. Are you journeyman yet, or are you going to be the 5-year rookie? Next year, you'll be 6-year.
5-year rookie is my claim to fame, ladies and gentlemen.
He can always plead ignorance. All right.
Let's get out of here, Mike.
I'm gone. Well, okay, people, we'll talk to you next time. All this worm casting stuff, it's really fascinating, and you can be self-sustaining. The kids will love you for it. Talk to you next time.
In the meantime, everybody.
What is it? Green thumbs up?
Green thumbs up,
oh,
baby.
Oh, I love it, man.
Thanks for listening to Your Midwest Garden. If you like today's conversation, please share this podcast with friends and family. And don't forget to click on the subscribe button so you won't miss any future episodes. Plus, if you have any show topics you'd like us to discuss, head on over to our sponsor's Facebook page, which is Black Diamond Garden Center, and message them your topic idea. For all of us at Your Midwest Garden Podcast, I'm Michael Rourke, the Garden Guy. Hope you enjoyed today's conversation.